Today on Against the Grain, what's America's largest public health care system? No, it's not Medicare, which isn't a provider of health care, just a payer. Don't know, and most of us don't. It's the Veterans Health Administration, which looks after 9 million ex-service members. I'm Sasha Lilly. I'll speak with healthcare journalist Suzanne Gordon about why we should care about the Veterans Health Administration and the push to privatize it. From the studios of KPFA in Berkeley, California, this is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio. I'm Sasha Lilly. The Veterans Health Administration is often in the news. Donald Trump and the Koch brothers-sponsored Concerned Veterans for America, along with congressional Republicans and some Democrats, think it should be replaced by the private sector. Journalist Suzanne Gordon fervently disagrees and argues that the VHA provides equal or better health care than that found in private medicine. In her book, Wounds of War, How the VA Delivers Health, Healing, and Hope to the Nation's Veterans, which is published by Cornell University Press, she makes a detailed case for public over private care. Suzanne, there have been various reports in the media about scandals at the VHA. Later on, we'll get to the question of privatization. But what's your assessment of the quality of care given veterans through the Veterans Health Administration?
Well, a lot of people believe what they read in the press, and it's not just Fox News. It's CNN. It's sometimes NPR. It's the New York Times, USA Today, the Boston Globe. And their reporting tends to be, I would argue, very biased. Very sensationalistic and focusing on the problems that occur in the nation's largest healthcare system. So what most people don't know is that the VHA is not only the only fully integrated and publicly funded national healthcare system in the country, but it's also the largest. And it's weird, Sasha, because it's the largest healthcare system in the country, but one that we probably know the least about. And one of the things we don't know is that study after study has shown that the VHA delivers better health care, often better or equal, to the private sector. And what the press has done is really a huge disservice to Americans and to veterans by reporting only on problems and never on achievements. And taking little tiny problems like a small critical access, a tiny critical access hospital in rural Oregon and making it stand for the whole system, or really inaccurate reporting. So it's biased, inaccurate. Often there sometimes are problems, big surprise, you have healthcare system. They never compare it to the private sector. And so people are given this, you know, in America, which has this notion that government can do no right and the private sector no wrong, you have this notion that veterans would be better off getting care in the private sector. And nothing could be further than the truth. And nothing could be further than the truth than that the veterans' healthcare system is not excellent. It is excellent.
Well, there are certainly some journalists who would not be at the camp pushing for privatization, who've also written critically about the VHA. I'm thinking of Aaron Glantz reporting on overprescription of opiates, for example, within the VHA. Couldn't the argument be made, and shouldn't the argument be made, that since veterans are a particularly vulnerable group in many ways, that we should make sure that the Veterans Health Administration is held accountable?
Oh, absolutely. The problem is not reporting like that. The problem is that there's no balanced reporting. So, for example, the New York Times reported on, I do work in patient safety. That's how come I began writing about the VHA, because I was interested in patient safety and teamwork. And let's not forget that we kill between 240 and 450,000 patients in America today in the private sector because of preventable medical errors. So maybe six people died in the VA because of Phoenix, and maybe not. That's never been able to determine, and we can talk about that. But you know, the private sector system has a lot of problems. I mean, one of the things that the reporting on the opiate crisis very rarely covers is the fact that this problem of opioid overprescription did not begin in the VA. You know, the VA was responding to this whole thing that happened in the 90s about, oh, we're not treating pain enough. And, you know, we have pain should be the fifth vital sign. And, you know, the Purdue pushing oxycodone and Oxycontin. And then the other thing it often leaves out is the DOD. I mean, the DOD, the Department of Defense. You know, in the various branches of the military gave out these opiates like candy because, you know, they're like football teams. The football player gets injured, you got to get him back in the game. The, you know, soldier, sailor, corpsman, whatever branch they're in gets injured, you got to get them back, you know, battlefield ready. People are, and so there's this multifaceted problem that the VA gets, you know, blamed for. And the problem with the reporting tends to be that it lacks context. It lacks context, it lacks history, it lacks comparison. It's very sort of snapshot. And the New York Times, again, to look at a very good example, but in 2012, a teenage kid, Roy Stenton, got killed by a medical mistake at New York Langone Medical Center. It was in the New York Times, huge coverage, as it deserved. They then did follow up on how, a couple years later, how NYU remediated the problem, and they reported on all kinds of other great things that NYU Langone Medical Center has done. Well, that you don't see that same pattern in reporting on the VA. There's been very little reporting in the Times or anywhere else about how the VA has remediated this. Of all the studies that come out, one after another about how the VA beats the private sector, how unready the private sector is to take care of veterans. And you never see studies on the achievements that I wrote about in my book, Wounds of War. I mean, it's really extraordinary. And we actually did it, the Veterans Healthcare Policy Institute and the Washington Monthly, we did a big report called Unreliable Sources that analyzes the relationship between the press and the VA.
Well, what do you think is motivating much of this negative coverage? Do you think there's a kind of an ideological filter at play?
Well, definitely there's an ideological filter. I mean, well, it actually began a long time ago. It began during the Bush administration because when the VA started really radically, dramatically changing in the Clinton era with the Undersecretary for Health, Kenneth Kaiser, who took over K-I-Z-E-R, and he helped to transform with his team the VA into this really, really high-performing healthcare system, and it became wonderful for patient safety and just outpatient care. It moved from inpatient to outpatient care. There was just this remarkable things going on. And it became so good that Business Week and Harvard Business Review and Forbes and the Wall Street Journal were saying that the VA should be a model for how to fix the broken American healthcare system. In comes Bush and the market addicts, and they don't like this. They don't like this narrative at all. And they start cracking down because it counters their government is bad, you know, private sector good. And you start seeing less promotion of the VA, the Veterans Healthcare Administration. The other problem is that the VHA is not allowed to advertise by law. There are big strictures on advertising and marketing. So the average VHA medical center, which is very large and treats lots of people, may have two public affairs officers. Take Milwaukee. They have two or three. The hospital, you know, down the street, Froedtert, has 37 people. The average VA has almost no budget for advertising. The average hospital, small community hospital, spends about $1 million. So they can get this "we do great things" out. The VA can't. And we see this now. There was a GAO, Government Accountability Office, report on their failure to use money allocated for suicide prevention outreach. And that's deliberate. They're sabotaging. You know, they're not using the money because they don't want to get, in my view, the message out about all the great things the VHA is doing about suicide prevention and research and teaching and so forth.
Well, we'll talk as we go much more about how the VA compares to private healthcare. But I wonder, since you're right, as you said, most of us have no idea about the Veterans Health Administration and this system of healthcare. Tell us about the scale and scope, who's eligible to be a patient, who works there, and you said it was integrated. What do you mean by that?
Oh, thank you. So actually, most people don't know about the VA, you know, starting. So the VA stands for the Department of Government of Veterans Affairs, right? And it's the second largest agency in the American government after the Pentagon, after the Department of Defense. And it has within it three agencies, the National Cemeteries, which very few people complain about, the Veterans Benefit Administration, which, you know, allocate, decides what benefits, GI Bill, home loans, et cetera, and healthcare that you're eligible for. And that's chronically underfunded and understaffed. And the VHA, which is the health administration, the largest agency, has 300,000 employees. It has 1,700 sites of care, 8,000 residential beds for, you know, substance abuse, PTSD, et cetera, 153 medical centers. It's huge. It has rehab centers for blindness, for stroke, for spinal cord injury. It has so many programs that somebody like me, who's just one person, was just daunted by trying to report on it. It's so big that I could go only to a few places because I would have had to have 100 of me in, you know, 100 years. A third of the employees of these 300,000 employees are veterans themselves. And so if you were to privatize the VA, you'd immediately throw 100,000 veterans out of work, which would not be a good idea because a lot of these people are groundskeepers and housekeepers and people who would have a tough time, you know, getting jobs. They're not all doctors and nurses and physical therapists and so forth. The other thing about this workforce is it's all on salary. It's not fee-for-service like in the private sector. So there's no incentive to overtreat. And in America, we spend $1 out of $7 of our healthcare dollars on an unnecessary, futile, toxic treatment. And not all veterans are eligible for VA care. Most people don't know that. There's 20 million veterans, give or take, in the United States, and only 9 million are enrolled in the VA. Probably 3 million more would be eligible. But you have to have either a service-connected disability. In other words, you have to have something that happened to you, condition that happened to you in the military service or was exacerbated by it, or you have to be poor. And so it's really the only healthcare system that cherry picks the sick, poor, and old. So its patient population is way more difficult than private sector healthcare, which makes its success even more remarkable and, at a lower cost.
How does the Veterans Health Administration differ from Medicare?
Oh, that's such a good question. Medicare is a payer of care, and it pays for mostly fee-for-service care in hospitals and from doctors and so forth. The VHA is a provider of care and a payer of care. It's more like the national health system in Britain or the Scandinavian health systems. So it pays for care and it provides the care. So that means you can have a whole lot more control, a whole lot more transparency, a whole lot more accountability, and you can innovate much easier, which is what the VHA has done with what you talked about, what you asked me about, which is integrated care. I mentioned that the VHA is an integrated healthcare system, and what a fully integrated healthcare system. And what that means, Sasha, is that not only can you as a veteran move from San Francisco to Peoria or to Florida or whatever, and go find a VHA hospital or clinic, and you present your VA card, and they have your record because they have a electronic medical record that communicates all your data. But this is even more important. It's integrated at the unit level. So, for example, primary care, one of the big innovations of the VHA was not only to have team-based primary care where people, clerks and nurses and nursing assistants and nurse practitioners work with physicians, but they integrate mental health care into primary care. They integrate pharmacy into primary care, dietitians, social work, and so forth. So what happens is you're a veteran patient, and you have a, you say to your primary care doc, I'm feeling anxious or I'm having nightmares or whatever. And they won't just say, okay, I'm going to refer you to a psychologist and you have to make an appointment, which you may or may not make, to which you may or may not show up. They will walk you down the hall in what's called a warm handoff. And they will actually introduce you to the psychologist or psychiatric nurse practitioner. And that person will see you right then and there. So, you know, this is really important when you have people who all of us have worries about admitting to our emotional and substance abuse problems if we have them, all of us. But veterans have this problem on steroids, you know, because they've been socialized not to be weak, not to even go to the doctor if they hurt their knee, much less their, you know, their soul, right? And so you get follow through, you get much better treatment. They have screening for PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, for depression, problems with daily living. If you have problems taking your meds, if you have diabetes, I sat in with people with their, you know, going over for 45 minutes their medications or their exercise with a pharmacist or a dietitian. You have problems with housing, with employment. They talk to a social worker. I mean, they have a whole homeless program. You could go on and on. Veterans courts for legal problems. It's not just a healthcare system. It's a public healthcare system, which is very different than a medical system.
I'm speaking with journalist and editor Suzanne Gordon about her book, Wounds of War. We're talking about the Veterans Health Administration. So you said a moment ago that it's not just a healthcare system, but a public healthcare system. What's the significance of that?
So what we have in the private sector is essentially a disease treatment system. It deals with diseases. It's best at episodic acute care than chronic disease management, even when you focus on diseases. But it doesn't deal very well with mental health care. I mean, we just saw in California a week-long strike by mental health professionals led by the National Union of Healthcare Workers because Kaiser, which is the system that is most closely related to the VHA, the Veterans Health Administration, has done a very poor job on mental health care. And people have to wait for months to get appointments. The state has fined Kaiser, et cetera. There's no integration of mental health and primary care, et cetera. So, and there is absolutely no attention paid in a system like Kaiser to homelessness, to vocational employment problems, to integrated pain management, to geriatric care. I mean, they barely, that the care of the elderly, to palliative and hospice care. I mean, there's some, but not much. And so a public health system deals with the, what they call social determinants of health, which is that, you know, maybe you have mental health problems because, like, you're homeless and you're on the street. Maybe you have physical problems because you're homeless on the street. The Veterans Administration has a huge program to deal with veteran homelessness in partnership with the Department of Housing and Urban Development. They have these vouchers to get people housing. And I spent a week with a social worker from the Veterans Health Administration at Fort Miley in San Francisco, going into Union Square and going up to homeless people and saying, are you a veteran? And trying to find individual veterans who were homeless and searching alleys. I mean, I can swear to you that, you know, Sutter or CPMC, they don't want homeless people. Yeah, these are private hospitals. They do not want homeless patients. They don't go seeking them. The VHA goes out like trolling, you know, the streets to find these homeless people.
If someone turns out to be a homeless veteran, are they eligible or do they then determine at that point whether they'll be seen?
Well, if you're homeless, you're indigent, and so you're automatically eligible. I mean, they may be eligible for other reasons. I mean, if you're an Iraq or Afghanistan vet, you get 5 years post-discharge free care. So they find these people. They get them housing. They help find them employment. I mean, I wrote about a center in Connecticut, the Arrera Community Care Center, which is connected to the West Haven VA. And this is like this amazing center that has all these programs for giving primary care to the homeless and or indigent and getting them in group therapy and getting them employment and housing. And it's a really robust program. I'm in San Diego. There's something called the Aspire Center, where it's an incredible inpatient program, residential program, where they try to prevent homelessness in Iraq and Afghanistan vets. And there are these programs just all over the country. There's a veterans court system, a veterans legal outreach system, where they try to find veterans in jails and prisons to try to get them to not be in jails and prisons. And there's veterans courts, which is part of a system of remediation courts. And, you know, it's like nothing you've ever seen on TV, Sasha. I mean, it's like in San Francisco, when I went, the judge baked brownies for the graduating class. And, you know, they try to get the mentors. They try to get them into substance abuse programs and recovery programs and psychological programs and you know, keep them out of jail. And this is like all over the country. I mean, you cannot replace that. It's public health. I mean, they could do better. But for example, the American Journal of Public Health, which is part of the American Public Health Association, did an entire journal issue on the way the VA delivers health equity and is concerned with health equity, which just means providing equal services to people who can't pay for them.
Well, let's talk more about what the Veterans Health Administration provides and how it contrasts with healthcare in the private sector, even though, as you're saying, in some ways it's comparing apples and oranges. But staying with the healthcare, how does something like women's health compare? Obviously, there are female veterans whose healthcare needs to be attended to.
Well, that's a very good example of how the VA innovates, because there were very few women veterans for a very long period of time because there were very few women in the military. Now we have about 14%. We have more. And so the VHA has had to play catch up. I mean, it's had to play catch up on a lot of things, on post-traumatic stress disorder, on toxic exposures. And so they suddenly were confronted with the fact that, oh my goodness, we have these women veterans. They have gynecological issues. They have military sexual trauma, which we could talk about because it's a really significant problem. They have babies and reproductive issues. So basically, they've launched this whole women's health program. And on some level, some women veterans feel it's not enough, and it's a transformative process. You know, you have a healthcare system that was used to dealing with the majority of men. So sometimes, you know, in a clinic, a women veteran will be called Mr. Smith instead of Mrs. Smith, or, you know, will be confused for somebody's wife. And that's unfortunate, but, you know, it takes time to adjust people's brains. But they are trying valiantly to, you know, to create a health system for women veterans. Now, they have women's health clinics in pretty much every large VA and a women's health specialist pretty much everywhere. They do outsource, which is wise of them, things like mammography and labor and delivery. I mean, you would not want to have babies delivered in a VA hospital if you only have a very small percentage of patients having babies because it's unsafe. I mean, one of the things people don't realize about healthcare in general, medical care in general, is patient volume equals safety. So you have to have enough. This is it's in whether in the VA or not, right? If you want to have a coronary artery bypass graft surgery, you want to go to a doctor who's done 10,000, not 10. And that means, you know, that they have to have volume. So they have to have enough patients. So they're not going to be in rural areas because there's not enough volume, right? You're going to have to travel to the best person because you got to get the volume. And it's the same thing. It would not make sense for VA hospitals to suddenly have labor and delivery suites because there's not enough volume. Makes sense for them to send them to the private sector, which they've always done. Mammography, they're not going to get mammogram machines. It makes absolutely no sense. But they do have gynecologists. They have urogynecologists, which is a very important specialty. They have these women's health clinics, which sometimes separate. They're always separate in a building. They may actually have a separate space outside the building. Now, there's some women veterans who've had military sexual trauma. And
tell us what that is.
So that means it's military sexual trauma could be everything from harassment to assault and rape. And a really large number of women have suffered from this in the military because it's a pretty macho culture, you know, and a number of men have had military sexual trauma. I mean, majority are women, but there are men. And so some of these women have been really traumatized. And they don't want to go to the VA because it has to do with the military and it has to do with men. And they want to go somewhere where they'll never see a man. That's kind of hard to deliver if you have, you know, a serious healthcare problem. It's hard to find an all-female system. But, you know, they're very, it's very emotionally triggering for them. Now, I was in Manhattan and a woman veteran spoke very eloquently about how she didn't want to go to the VA because it was triggering. And then she realized that actually this was actually helping her get over the trauma because she was helped to deal with some of the triggers. But some people don't want that. So I think they're really trying. And you know, every healthcare system makes mistakes. Every healthcare system has problems. Every healthcare system plays catch up, right? Because if we're scientific, we have to have evidence that this problem exists. We have to know how to treat it, diagnose it, et cetera. So what you want to judge a system on is improvement over time. And that's what we're seeing in the VA. I mean, I've seen it anecdotally, but the studies show this kind of improvement. And women's health is an area where could they do better? Of course. Are they trying? Yes.
You're listening to Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio. I'm Sasha Lilly. Today, I'm speaking with the author of Wounds of War, How the VA Delivers Health, Healing, and Hope to the Nation's Veterans. That's published by Cornell University Press, and its author is Suzanne Gordon. She is Senior Policy Fellow at the Veterans Healthcare Policy Institute and author of a number of books. So staying with how the Veterans Health Administration compares to the private sector, which is relevant since there are various political forces that would like to privatize the VA, how does mental health compare in the private sector to the Veterans Health Administration?
So that's a really great and important question because veterans suffer from twice as many mental health problems as civilians. About between 18 and 30% PTSD, and you don't have to be in combat to have PTSD.
Post-traumatic stress disorder.
They have this in Iraq and Afghanistan vets. It's complicated by traumatic brain injury, what's known as TBI. They have a lot of depression, anxiety. Then they may have schizophrenia. They have a huge amount of substance abuse disorders because often they're trying to treat by themselves their mental health problems. And the private sector, as was illustrated by what I talked about, Kaiser, Tom Insull, who left as director of the National Institute of Mental Health in 2016, was interviewed and said, that the American mental health system is broken. I mean, we know that bipolar disorder, depression, huge numbers of people go untreated. I mean, Insel said it was almost a civil rights issue, how bad mental health care is and how poor access is to mental health care. I mean, we know that in the private sector, jails and prisons are our primary mental health system. I mean, people are put in jails and prison. We have very few psychiatric beds. I think that one study suggested that the psychiatric bed problem in America is like as bad as it was in the 1880s or 1850s. I mean, they've closed beds. In California, you know, they deinstitutionalize patients without providing a system for them to go into. You know, one could go on and on. And I mean, anybody who is in the civilian sector who's had a loved one who has serious chronic mental health problems knows what a nightmare it is. I mean, you can get hospitalized for a very short amount of time. They kick you out. They, you know, in the private sector, very few psychiatrists will accept any insurance payment at all. Any insurance payment. In San Francisco, for example, cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a treatment that is really recommended very highly in evidence-based treatment for PTSD, there is almost no psychologist or social worker who will accept insurance for CBT. So if you have $250, $230 a pop for 20 sessions lying under your mattress, you know, they'll be happy to take you, but you better fork it out, you know. And so this is a treatment that's at the VHA free, right, for people. Meditation, yoga, it's all private pay in the outside system and increasingly difficult to get insurance coverage, or it's a very short, truncated period of time that you can get therapy that's paid for. I mean, if you're wealthy and you can afford it, you're cool, right? So the VHA, I would argue, and I think many people do, is really one of the only mental health care systems that's functioning in the United States. They teach people how to do, for example, just take post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, which is a signature problem for people in not only in combat, but in the military. And there's two evidence-based treatments, prolonged exposure therapy, cognitive processing therapy, and they've taught thousands of practitioners to do these therapies. And this is really important to think about, because not only have they given them workshops, which is fine, but they give them 6 months of clinical supervision following the workshop to make sure they know how to do the treatment. And you don't see that in the private sector. You know, they might take a continuing medical education course and go to a workshop, but it doesn't work. You don't develop the skills unless you're supervised, because this is very complicated. Suicide prevention is really critical. I mean, I spent a day at the Veterans Crisis Line in Canandaigua, New York, with a suicide prevention staff who, you know, was getting these phone calls from veterans all over the world, all over the country. It was pretty scary, you know, some guy like with a gun to his head and his wife and three children in the next room. And, you know, they have to decide, do we call the cops? You know, are the cops trained in how to, you know, not pull the gun out? They have suicide prevention coordinators in every facility. They have a program that tries to temporarily and voluntarily separate veterans from their guns. I mean, this kind of thing does not happen in the private sector. It just doesn't.
I know you have been someone who's followed closely labor relations and conflicts within the private sector. What is the state of labor within the Veterans Health Administration? Are any of the staff unionized?
It's almost wall-to-wall union, and that's one of the reasons why the ultra-right wing hates the VA, the VHA. The VA too, because it's unionized. And the Koch brothers funded the conservative. I don't even think they're conservative. They're just off the charts libertarian, hate government, hate the idea of people helping each other. They poured millions of dollars into the Concerned Veterans for America, which is a it pretends to be a veteran service organization. It has no members and delivers no services. And it's very tight with the Trump administration. Darren Selnick, who was a representative, worked at CVA, is now a senior advisor on the implementation of the VA Mission Act of 2018, which is the legislation that was passed with the help, tragically, of many Democrats. And it is now the thing that we have to pay attention to as they try to privatize the VA, the Veterans Health Administration. And unions are one of the things they're trying to crack down on. I mean, Trump has tried to take official time away from unions that represent employees in the VHA. And that means that, that people can't get paid for the time that they take to represent workers. They would just love, one of the reasons they want to privatize the VHA is because they want to get rid of unions. And, you know, it's interesting to me, Sasha, because I think when the right wing, the ultra-right wing, spends millions of dollars attacking a federal or public program, it's usually not because it doesn't work. Because you don't need to spend millions of dollars trashing something that doesn't work, right? It's doing the work for yourself. It's because it works. It's a government program that works. And every single study we have attests to that. And that's what they can't tolerate. So what you're seeing now is, and hopefully you won't be seeing this, because hopefully the new Democrats who go into the House will protect the Veterans Health Administration. I'm worried that about that. I hope they will learn more. But basically, you have this conservative attack with the Mission Act, which will, if Secretary Wilkie allows, creates and develops implementation standards and eligibility standards that allow more veterans to go to private sector care, that will deplete the system of patients. The Mission Act also has a kind of BRAC, it was the base closing type provision called the Asset and Infrastructure Review Commission that the president, this president, gets to appoint in 2020, and they will decide which facilities are underutilized, and those facilities will be closed. So what we have now is a setup. If the Secretary Wilkie, who does pretty much what his boss wants him to do and is very tight with the Concerned Veterans for America and all these right-wing groups, if he develops implementation standards, eligibility standards that deplete the VHA of patients, and then they look at in this commission and they say, oh my goodness, Fort Miley, Sacramento, they don't have enough patients, let's just close them, then you know, the system will die.
Sounds a bit like what happens with charter schools in the public school system.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you get people leaving the public schools. And also the thing about the Mission Act is that every dollar that goes to pay for more expensive private sector care is taken out of the VA budget directly. So there's less money to fill the 45,000 staffing vacancies. There's less money to hire new people. No money for advertising, and it's rigged. And the Democrats, overwhelmingly, not Bernie Sanders, not 79 House representatives like my wonderful Congressman Mark Saulnier, they voted against. But the overwhelming amount of Democrats, including Mark Takano, who will now be the chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, they voted for this bill. Takano still embraces this notion of bipartisanship with a Republican party that doesn't want to be bipartisan.
I'm speaking with Suzanne Gordon about her book, Wounds of War. She is Senior Policy Fellow at the Veterans Healthcare Policy Institute. This is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio, and I'm Sasha Lilly. Well, of course, the Democrats have a long history of supporting privatization, so in many ways, that's not a surprise. But it sounds like you're saying that the danger to the Veterans Health Administration is one of death by a thousand cuts rather than a frontal privatization. And I guess it raises the question for listeners who might, until this point, know nothing about the Veterans Health Administration, and who might have some ambivalence about the fact that this institution in many ways seems to be unique primarily because of its relationship with the military and, you know, the United States government sending people overseas and where they are harmed, and then the Veterans Health Administration picks up the pieces. Why should the rest of us care about the fate of the Veterans Health Administration?
Thank you so much for asking that. For so many reasons. First of all, the reason why the Koch brothers hate and the right hates the VHA is because it's an example of a national health program, a publicly funded national health program. And it's not quite single payer, but it's the closest thing we have that works. And they don't want to see that. The Koch brothers, for example, is using the VHA as a poster child in this inaccurate, broken VA narrative that here's what will happen if you have government-run healthcare. So any of us who care about single-payer, national healthcare, reform in the healthcare system to benefit us should be very worried about the fate of the VA. And you don't have to be a veteran, and you should be calling your congressman or senator immediately and saying, do not kill the VA, fund the VA, staff the VA, fix the VA, don't outsource their care. That's one reason. Another reason is we owe it to these veterans. I mean, we made them a promise. I don't like the wars. I mean, I spent my whole entire life fighting, you know, from the Vietnam War to the Iraq War. I don't like these wars. But the argument that we shouldn't fix the VA because we have these terrible wars and the VA is somehow connected to the military is really, that's not the way you stop war, you know? And if you want, I mean, I think also for the people who are progressive and on the left, I mean, we need to have these veterans on our side, you know? I mean, we need to show them that Trump, who insists he's pro-vet and pro, you know, military, is not. He's trying to kill their healthcare system. And, you know, study after study shows that the private sector can't deal with them and doesn't want to deal with them. And they have very specific problems. I mean, RAND did a study, the RAND Corporation, which is independent. It's, you know, certainly not some left-wing socialist group. They did a study of New York healthcare providers in the state of New York, which has the fifth largest veteran population in the country. And they developed 7 criteria to assess whether these providers were ready to serve veterans. And only 2% the criteria. Over 50%, way over 50%, said they knew nothing about military culture. And when they were asked if they'd like to learn, they said no. I mean, so they said, oh, we'd be happy to do our bit. We'd be happy to take taxpayer money to care for vets, but we're not interested in learning about their specific problems. So, you know, so I think that the notion that, I mean, I think the left has a veteran problem. And, you know, if you want to talk to working class Americans, that's them. I mean, the VHA is not for the officer class. It's for the grunts. And, you know, and the whether or not we like the wars that they were recruited for, enlisted for, were drafted in, because we still got people who were drafted, you know, we have to take care of them because, you know, it, and that's part of the cost of war. And I think that one of the things that we have to fight for is, okay, you want to wage war, you have to include the cost of the care, the aftercare, the decades and decades and decades of aftercare into the cost of war. This should not be a separate budget.
Do you see a connection between the fight for single payer and the Veterans Health Administration? Are they sort of have some affinity, but operating in totally different realms?
I think that anybody who's for single payer needs to know about the VHA, because personally, I think the slogan should be VA Care for All, not Medicare for All, because Medicare is a payer. And that was a strategic decision, you know, made by single-payer people, not to offend doctors, not to attack fee-for-service, et cetera. But we should be working towards VHA Care for All, because it's a system of care, and we need a system of care. That's the way you cut costs, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, clearly, I'm for single payer. I'm for Medicare for All, improve Medicare for All. But people who are in that struggle need to understand that the reason why the right wing is attacking the VHA is because they don't want, you know, for ideological and financial reasons. And they do not want an example of a government socialized program that works. And they are determined to kill it, as you said, starving it, bad mouthing it, trashing it, whatever way they can, you know, they want to kill it. And we, I believe it, I mean, okay, I mean, obviously, I'd like people to read Wounds of War. If you don't read Wounds of War, you know, go to my website, SuzanneGordon.com, go to the Veterans Healthcare Policy Institute website, but find out about the VA. Sasha, I was sitting in a meeting at the Arrera Center that I mentioned in Connecticut with a group of people, doctors, psychologists, social workers from England who had come from the national health system to look at American healthcare. And they'd gone to Yale New Haven Hospital and other hospitals, and they were completely baffled. They couldn't believe it. You know, what? How does this work? It doesn't work, et cetera. They came to the VA, and you could hear in this 30, 40 group of people this immense sigh of relief because they finally found a healthcare system that works and that made sense. And their question to the group, and it was fascinating to the VHA providers there, was why is this only for veterans? Why isn't it for all Americans? And that's my question.
One thing that is striking about the Veterans Health Administration, one thing you point to as a real difference between the private sector and the public healthcare that's provided by the Veterans Health Administration has to do with the patients, and not simply because they're obviously veterans, that they are organized in a way that most patients in the private sector are not. Can you tell us about the significance of that? How are they organized, and what does that actually achieve?
So if you have a government program, it is accountable to citizen action. I mean, if Johnny veteran at Fort Miley or Palo Alto doesn't get his PT, his physical therapy on time, or is unhappy, he can call his congressman. They can have a congressional investigation. There's an office of the inspector general in the VA that does reports. The government accountability office does reports. If I'm unhappy or you're unhappy about my PT or about my doctor, it's like, good luck. You know, I mean, you call your congressman, they'll laugh you off the phone, right? The only remedy we have if something bad happens to us is to sue. And very few cases that are actual malpractice actually, you know, go to court and get settled. And if there's a settlement, we don't know about it because you sign a non-disclosure agreement. So we can't learn from the problem. In the VA, you also have this organized veteran service organizations and veterans advocacy organizations, and they have somebody they can complain to. There can be a congressional hearing, and this is aired. You know, private sector patients are atomized. You can maybe join a group, and most of these groups have now been, you know, patient advocacy groups have been taken over by pharmaceutical companies. We now know about that. And actually, it's interesting because some of the new veterans advocacy organizations, which are worrisome, this is a worrisome fact, have been funded by pharmaceutical and healthcare companies. So are they going to fight for the VA? I don't know.
So wait a minute. So you're saying that these are basically have been turned into front groups by the pharmaceuticals?
Well, certainly some of them have been. Yeah, there was a big problem with Wounded Warrior that might be remedied. There are some other groups that have a lot of funding from these corporations. A lot of the new veterans groups that are attracting younger veterans are completely apolitical. I mean, the large veterans service organizations, which can be used to advocate and have advocated, have policy people. They know, you know, they have people who work on these issues, healthcare policy and other policies. I feel that they made a very huge error and they're now having buyer's remorse because they fought for the Mission Act. But and so one of the
which
things,
is
the VA Mission Act of 2018, which is, if we aren't careful, going to open the door for privatization and death by a thousand cuts and the stealth privatization of the VHA. And that's why I think the veteran service organizations are now worried and are doing some lobbying to Congress. But interestingly, Wilkie, Secretary Wilkie, who is Trump's second secretary of the VA after Secretary Shulkin was forced out, ostensibly because he didn't privatize fast enough. Secretary Wilkie is saying, oh, I don't know, these old groups, they're full of old guys. Let's listen to the younger people like CVA, the Concerned Veterans for America. You know, and it's no wonder he likes these newer groups because either they're apolitical or they're, you know, on the very, very far right of the political spectrum. And so we have to worry about them. But the point is, if you have a government system, you can organize groups that petition the government for redress of grievances. And these groups have been very effective. They got Agent Orange, recognition of Agent Orange and dioxin in use in Vietnam, burn pit exposures in Iraq and Afghanistan, PTSD. I mean, they fight very hard for advances in the VHA. And if you get rid of those kind of groups, and if you have if you have to petition 6,000 different hospitals and 765,000 individual doctors, good luck.
Let me end by asking you, what's your sense of what the veterans themselves, those who are served by the Veterans Health Administration, think about privatization? Because often, like with schools, things get framed in terms of choices and people end up thinking, well, I just have a broader spectrum of choices I can pick from.
That's the tragedy. So the veterans, not only the ones, I mean, I talked to hundreds of veterans and their families, and all of them, you know, there were a few that didn't like the Veterans Health Administration. A lot of them were complaining about the Veterans Benefit Administration, which is a whole other kettle of fish. And they were, most of what I got was, the VA saved my life. I'd be in a ditch without the VA, et cetera. The Veterans of Foreign War did a survey of veterans, and 72% of veterans were opposed to privatization and wanted the Veterans Health Administration to be improved, not dismantled. Now, that's why Secretary Wilkie and all these Republicans say we're against privatization, because what they mean by privatization is tomorrow we sell the whole thing off, fire everybody, and you all go to the private sector. That's not what's going to happen. It's going to be death by a thousand cuts. It's going to be, 20% of veterans sent out, 30, 40, 50, 60, not hiring staff, starving of resources. And that's what we have to do. That's how we have to define privatization. We have to insist that, no, they are privatizing now. They may say they're against it, but they're doing it. And that's what we have to fight against.
Suzanne Gordon, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Sasha.
Suzanne Gordon is the author of Wounds of War, How the VA Delivers Health, Healing, and Hope to the Nation's Veterans. That's published by Cornell University Press. And on againstthegrain.org, you can find a link to that book. Suzanne Gordon is Senior Policy Fellow at the Veterans Healthcare Policy Institute, author of many books, and co-editor of the Cornell University Press series, The Culture and Politics of Healthcare Work. You've been listening to Against the Grain. I'm Sasha Lilly. Thanks so much for listening. And please tune in again next time. Against the Grain is produced by Sasha Lilly and C.S. Song. Please visit us online at againstthegrain.org, where you'll find on-demand and downloadable audio and a way to sign up for our podcast. And you can check us out on Facebook at Against the Grain Radio or follow us on Twitter at Radio Against.